You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring attorney, guest, and former felony prosecutor Eric Fadis.
There was another piece of testimony, and I've watched it several times here now this week on many clips, where she is on the stand and she kind of goes back and forth between being very emotional and then able to just kind of snap out of it and just answer questions as if there's nothing going on. One of those questions and one of those points was asking about the gun. Where was it? In a laundry basket, loaded. She had a little child that ran around this house. She was out to the park with grandma while this was going on. I mean, the argument can be made like that's insanely irresponsible, but also who has a loaded 45 sitting in the laundry basket right there? I don't know that it was premeditated or she's just a very paranoid, impulsive person considering she has a weapon here, a weapon there, and some people are just gun people like that. Maybe that's the explanation. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, to your question, who has a loaded 45 in a laundry basket? It could be someone who has something in mind that they're going to do to try to get free from an abuser. Mm-hmm. Or it could be someone who is so traumatized and scared that something could happen during this pivotal event in their relationship that she had to have something nearby.
I agree. I mean, I can see both sides on this damn thing. And I'm arguing both sides in every interview that I'm doing this week because I don't know what to think. I can understand it from hers because, again, I think Doug was a shitty, abusive person. The story of him shooting the gun into the air. Who the fuck shoots a gun into the air in their home to make a point or to get somebody to be quiet unless you're really unhinged and you don't have much self-control?
You know, that's extreme behavior and you know, goes beyond normal relationship woes and the responses we would expect. And then when you add to that, not only the firearm piece, but also the allegation of animal abuse, the allegation of suicide threats, it all starts to form the picture that Ashley was trying to paint in terms of her being a battered spouse. And I think does so with some substantiation.
But that's the problem, because a lot of these things are simply her claims of the animal abuse. I mean, yeah, I mean, you want to piss off a lot of people real quick. Tell everybody that he was abusing the animals. But was he? Do we have any vets that said, yes, we saw these animals? It's a claim. It's a claim she made that he was physically abusive in a previous court hearing. She said that he was physically abusing her when she was trying to get full custody of the kids. And the court said, we don't have one scintilla of truth. And on the stand there, she says he was never abusive. So it's another example of her story changing or her exaggerating things to a certain extent. And if you take a step back and go, okay, why would she be doing that? You know, maybe because she hasn't been heard. Maybe because she feels that, well, all these other things that are truly important, but they don't seem to hear that. So maybe I have to say something more extreme to be understood and to be heard, that's why she did it. Is it right? No, I mean, not in the eyes of the law. But, you know, is it justified if you're a parent and you're trying to protect your child? I'd make shit up if I absolutely needed to, if I thought that that person was truly a danger. Thank God I've never felt that way. But, you know, if you truly feel like you're not being heard and there's a danger there, yeah, I mean, you're a parent. You're going to do what you need to do to protect your child. So, again, I can see it on both ways.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it from Ashley's perspective, she's going to say that she has been ignored and dismissed for years in terms of raising these concerns. And when no one's listening to you and you get in dire straits, sometimes you take additional measures to try to be heard. And like you said, maybe that was her embellishing or fabricating, but those discrepancies certainly cost her. And the prosecution brought up in their closing that, you know, the defense experts and their evidence is based largely on just her statements. Yeah. And that's sometimes not enough to win the day.
Had she not embellished the way that she has, and she didn't have a track record of embellishing, do you think we'd be sitting here at a manslaughter charge? Or do you, I mean, just on its own merit, just look, battered, this is the experience she had. You know, was it called for at that moment in time? Probably not, but battered spouse and guy's shooting a gun into the air and he's talking about taking people off the face of the earth just because he heard people in the background of a phone call. And I mean, I think it's understandable to understand where she was and why she did pull that trigger. But it's the embellishments that I think sunk her more than anything else.
Tony, I've seen countless times in trials where one side overstates their case. And the juries see it. They're not stupid usually. Yeah. And they usually can sort of tell and sift through what is true and what is BS to a degree. Mm-hmm. And so I think overstating your case is almost always problematic. And that could have been a part of why she was convicted in this case.
Well, especially when you overstate your case and then you start forgetting what you've overstated in the past. Because there was a lot of that. There was when she was saying, "I don't know," on the stand to so many questions, I don't know that she was saying, "I don't know," to what actually happened. I think it was more so, "I don't know what I've said in the past to keep this story going," because there's other incidents of that where he drew the gun at the ceiling. There's a story there where one said one time she said he drew it from his waist, the other he drew it from his boot. I don't know. How do you mix these things up?
I hear you, but could it be a function of, you know, a woman in her 20s who is on the stand, unfamiliar, well, not totally unfamiliar with the court process, but yeah, not a professional witness or anything, and being peppered with questions. You know, we saw in that clip just how hard-nosed that prosecutor was going at her while she is like physically crumbling on the stand.
Yeah.
And so mistakes can be made, and perhaps that's a part of it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point and a good argument. I guess it's one of those things where at the end of the day, only one person truly knows what happened here, and that's her. And, well, Doug, and he's gone. But, jury has come in with their decision.
Are you ready to listen to this podcast ad-free?
Then hit subscribe to the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel now on Apple Podcasts.
You'll instantly have access to all of our episodes labeled Advance Ad-Free. You'll hear the interviews before everyone else and with no interruption.
No interruptions.
Subscribe to the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel now on Apple Podcasts.
And start binging now.